All right. Well, we're just a couple of hours away from the start of the 2024 championship season. Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker, joined by Caleb Joseph, Blue Jays Central. Should we get to the lineups right away?
Absolutely.
Should I ask about your opening day remnants?
Do the lineups first.
Jays lineup is as follows. George Springer, Vladdy Jr., Bo Bichette, Justin Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, IKF, Biggio, and Jose Brios on the mound. Vladdy Jr. hitting second, Bo Bichette hitting third, Justin Turner, the DH. This is something we saw at the end in spring training, guys. Something John Schneider talked about yesterday. I'll start with Caleb and then go to Kevin because we talked about this a lot yesterday. But Caleb, are you surprised that we're seeing John Schneider committing to this right away, like right from the get-go?
Nope, not at all. I think a lot of it had to do with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. talking about protection behind him. And what a better way to protect him than to put, in my opinion, your best run producer in Bo Bichette right behind him. So as a catcher, you're trying to find ways to find the out. And if I don't have to pitch to Guerrero Jr., I'm not going to. Well, with Bichette right behind him, now you're sort of forced to pick your poison. And even Turner behind Bichette. Bichette now has protection. That's a big league hitter behind Bichette. And so you've got this layer of this three-headed monster that they're going to have to pick your poison as a catcher. I like it. Anything to give Vladimir Guerrero Jr. the comfort he needs to go out and have a 2021 replica season, if it means having protection, have at it.
You think Bo's comfortable with it?
I think Bo is at the point in his career where he wants to win. And I think he's going to put anything to the side, any and everything to the side, to say, look, whatever it takes to win, let's do it. There's a sense that he just knows that this window is closing. He knows his time is running out. He doesn't want to be remembered as a player that made it to the playoffs but couldn't win a playoff game, because it's going to be tied. Him and Guerrero are going to be kind of the main points when people look back at this era and say, well, they couldn't get it done. He doesn't want to be in that conversation. So if it means him hitting third, if it means him hitting second, if it means doing whatever he needs to do to win, I think he's all in.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. This is what it's about, getting off to a hot start. When I was in spring training, that was the thing.
6-4, baby. Got to be 6-4, Caleb, or the season. So you missed Barker yesterday. If they're not 6-4, I mean, we may not even have a show.
That's not what I said. I said,
come back because you don't,
it's rare. Well, it's rare that you completely listen to me. I mean, you only, you know, you're at the age now, you only hear certain words that you want to hear. You don't hear everything that I say in a complete sentence. What I was saying was, is that the things you were talking about in spring training and the offseason, impactful at bats, right? You want to walk to the plate and swing at what you do damage on. Well, 5-5 tell you they're doing that. I understand it's on the road, and I understand it's against some good teams. But if you're going to make the playoffs, you got to beat good teams, right? If you don't want to go 21-31 again in the American League East and think you can make the playoffs. Some other teams in the American League are just as good as you are. So you're going to have to do better. What's that mean? Get off to a better start. 6-4 would make you happier than 5-5. That's what I was trying to say. But you didn't hear that, so.
No, I did. I just don't agree with it. You were a teammate of this core, Caleb. If I had told you back then when you were on this team that we would be 2 years away from Vladdy and Bo being a free agent, and we would have had no postseason success, what would you have told me back then, your year with this team? Would you have looked at me and said,
which one got traded?
Very good.
What? That's what I would have said.
Yeah, no, but seriously, would you have been surprised?
Yeah, you could feel that what was building in 20, and these were just kids, and they made the playoffs, right. And there was almost a sense of surprise that they made the playoffs. And then they started adding these pieces, these pitching pieces to stabilize that part of their game, and then they do add some pieces offensively. But yeah, the fact that they haven't won a playoff game is incredibly surprising, considering that I believe that both of them at any point can put the game on their back and win it, and it just hasn't happened. And I think even the way the last year ended was just a microcosm of like the entire season. But sometimes those big boys, they've got to come in and just say enough's enough. Much like a Nathan McKenna did with the Colorado Avalanche last year or a couple years ago. He just said
the hockey reference.
Wow.
Wow.
What's happened here?
Enough is
what's
enough.
Going on?
That guy put the team on his shoulders.
Make sure you guys cut that out.
Yeah. It was the hockey show.
Cut out the hockey reference there. No, listen, I will admit, I don't know if anybody thought they'd win a World Series, but I certainly thought at this stage of their career all kidding aside, I thought either one of them would have a long-term deal and one would be traded, or two, they'd at least have, we'd have a situation where Bo was covered through, one of them was covered through arbitration and the other had a long-term deal. But I just assumed that we would have some measure of postseason success at this point, whether or not it was going to the World Series. I mean, winning series.
Yeah, there's some luck in that. I think it's how it ends most of the time. It's like off the field can't get on the same page with on the field, and what you have on the field's not living up to what you expected it to live up to against lesser teams. I don't know about you, but I've always thought that the Blue Jays should be better than the Twins. Lately, they have not been when it matters the most. And then your lasting impression of how it ended was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. getting picked off second. Like, just little things like that, right, that I think they need to clean up. And that's why it won't be a good season for me unless they move past the first round.
Right.
That's it. If they move past the first round, I think everybody would be happy with that.
All right, Caleb, I wanted to. The last time we saw Jose Berríos start a game was in Minnesota. Of course, we all know what happened during that game. Jose Berríos on opening day. This is going to be his fourth opening day start. It'll be his second with the Jays. I don't want to start this negative, but his first one in 2022 lasted seven batters. And I'm just looking at it here. Solo homer, walk, single, fielder's choice, hit by pitch. I know we talked about this a little bit before we came on air. Does Jose Berríos feel going into this start that he has to prove something after the postseason? And you know, if you were catching him, I presume you're not going to say, dude, you stunk in opening days. What the hell is up with
starts,
that?
Three starts, it's ERA of almost seven.
Three starts, his ERA is almost seven.
You would have to mention it.
Is it a thing?
Or pay attention to
How
it.
How would you handle that?
Yeah, great question. I think from my perspective, you're on high alert. So
right.
I don't think you're going into right before start saying, hey, man, first start of the season, don't blow it because you have the last, like, three or four.
But you're aware of it as a catcher.
You're wearing it up to the pitching coach. Yeah, you would mention that.
And, you know, a good pitching coach is going to say, hey, you know, opening days haven't been his best. Like, here's what we're looking for. And if he gets sidetracked, here's where we want him to go. And so it's more about what he's doing and how he's presenting himself than really getting the perfect sequences down against the opposing hitters. But it is a bit shocking because you look at how he performed last year in the playoffs. It was a great start. He had his best stuff. And so is it pressure or is it just wanting to get off on the right foot? He just seems like a very even keel player to me, though.
Yep.
And so it's hard to see that the emotion would get to him. But again, the feet of a duck underwater are paddling, but it looks calm on the outside. So I don't know exactly what that's about. Hopefully it changes today and he has a great start.
Yeah, the Rays got two lefties. He's got a nice little toy he's added with the cutter. Would you work it in? When would you work it in? How much you think they should work it in? Again, he's a sinker slurve guy. And then the other fastballs, and he'll throw some changeups to some lefties. But he does have a little toy that could make the slurve a little bit better. Would you abuse it today, or is that a work in progress, do you think?
This is the funnest part of catching right here is figuring this question out. When do you want to use the new toy? Well, you have an idea going into the start based off of what you've seen in spring training of how much you trust it as a catcher. The recommendations are going to come based off of his best ones. But you know, is he throwing more of them that are really good, or is it 50-50 so far? So you already know that going into it. What I always tried to do early on was to not allow that pitcher to get beat by that pitch early on. Find spots where he can throw it, have a lot of room for error without the game being on the line, where if he hung one and they clip him out in front, it swings the game. You've got to find ways for him to kind of ease into it because the season is totally different than spring training. There's no back of the ball card stats on spring training.
Right.
You're just working on stuff. Well, it counts right now. So you try and really ease him into that, find counts against hitters that you know have a really good weakness up there, and you've set it up correctly.
Do you think in some ways PitchCom might make it a little easier?
For
that, you know, if he calls for the pitch, you go, okay.
Yeah,
I guess he's got confidence here. I'm just wondering, would it make it easier?
I would think the Rays have seen him before, and that's a little element of surprise, right? Oh, look, that thing's got a wrinkle in it, right? It's sort of a different hook to his slider. It looks a little different.
No
you can
question.
Steal it. You can get a weak contact early in a count.
Right.
You could backdoor it to a lefty. Like, you could do some things to it.
Oh, I loved that pitch as a weapon against left-handers. And it's all about changing planes and staying out of the same zone. So this pitch is going to continue to stay and hold its plane, moving more left to right, but gives that element that it's moving in. It's just basically a right-handed cutter. I mean, it just kind of, it goes in there, and what it does is it opens up a little bit more of the down and away spot. But being able to have that conversation that you can hit the button on the transmitter and have that flow so much quickly, I would have loved to have had that. I know we're years past that device now, but being able to call it, and you can tell his body language when he sees it. He'll kind of, not right now, you can feel his confidence in his body language when you call it, and he might feel the same way. If you call it and you're like, hey, this is like, come on, like, this is it. You can feed off of each other's energy that way.
George Springer hits a home run his first at bat. He doesn't wear the jacket. Is that a big deal? Does anybody?
Man, I thought I was going to be the one to bring out the jacket.
Does anybody care but us?
It has the potential to be a big deal. But
well, you notice I didn't say if Bo Bichette hits a home run,
right?
Would it matter? I said George Springer.
Right.
So I made it a little easier for you to work your way into.
Yeah. No, it's you're a very kind man.
Absolutely.
Very nice man.
You're trying to skate around the fact that you think Bo hates the jacket. Let's be honest.
He disagrees with it.
It has the potential to be an issue if they don't win baseball games. Because the last thing this team needs is a distraction. This team needs to be focused on one thing, and primarily it's hitting the baseball, but winning baseball games. And anything that's a distraction, no bueno for this team. They're beyond all that stuff. So I really would love to see, as I know you do too, the jacket put on everybody on that team 300 times this year. And I think winning trumps all the other feelings in the room.
That's a great answer.
Want to do a little bit of housekeeping here. We'll be on all the Sportsnet channels until 3 o'clock. Blue Jays Central will take over at 3 o'clock in the main channels. We'll be on 360. Jason Stark will join us. And Brian Anderson, the Rays analyst, will be along in a few minutes. The Jays have officially made these roster moves. Brian Servant selected the Major League roster. Daniel Vogelbeck has been selected the Major League roster. Danny Jansen's on the 10-day IL with a right wrist fracture. Alec Manoah's on the 15-day IL. Jordan Romano's on the 15-day IL. Eric Swanson's on the 15-day IL. These are all retroactive to March 25th. Yosver Zulueta was designated for assignment, and the Cincinnati Reds just claimed him, I believe, before we came in the air. So I guess the news yesterday, in addition to the lineup, Caleb and Kevin, no Jordan Romano, no Eric Swanson. We'll leave Kevin Gausman aside. I think that's something that we may get clarity on at some point in the next day or so. Who has to step up here? Mm. I mean, obviously people are talking about Chad Green.
Mm-hmm.
I think Buck and Dan also, they mentioned Tim Meza, Yenesis Cabrera, and Jimmy Garcia. More,
Jimmy Garcia is one of them.
Jimmy Garcia. Mm-hmm. Is that the guy to you that steps up?
He's had experience in that position. I think they're probably going to default to him right out the gate. But we know that Garcia is usually better in that kind of 6-7 pocket for whatever reason. Maybe it's confidence. Maybe it's just comfort. Who knows? But he's better in that position. So to thrust him into more of a later inning position is going to be difficult. What this reminds me of without these two guys is what John Schneider has had to do before they got a couple pieces, which was find the perfect matchup and play the matchup game from 6 to 7 to 8. Now he has to do it in the 9th. So you're going to have to ask the manager to play the perfect matchup because these guys are all going to be slotted in positions that they're probably not going to be when those two guys are back.
Earlier to do it, is it easier to do it earlier in the year than later in the year?
Ooh.
Well, when you're starting on the road, 10 games on the road versus 3 really good teams, and you really want to get off to a good start.
Not 5-5, 6-4.
But you've got to have a level of understanding with this bullpen. This is a bullpen that had amazing success last year. You expect them to have a bit of a dip just going into it so that your expectations aren't totally out of the water. Now they're missing two guys. I think the word is patience early with this bullpen. And the best way to protect this bullpen is to score 10 runs.
You know what it is, too? Just don't beat yourself. Like, don't run into outs that you shouldn't be running into. This is a veteran team. It's not a young team. Jeff says this all the time. It's not a young team anymore. You know, don't get thrown out at third with Bo up. Don't do that.
There's a level of smart yet aggressive at the same time. And sometimes those two can mix. And look, there's just no more excuses. Make the right decision. You're professional. Like, just make the right decision. Your baseball instinct should know that. And I do think that the addition of DeMarlo Hale is going to really help with that. We were together in Baltimore, and he sees the game a very certain way. He is not afraid to be the big boy in the room and not afraid to point some stuff out.
It's interesting because he was been on Jay's coaching staff as well. The number of people that have said, my first question is, why hasn't he managed? But the number of people who say that about DeMarlo Hale and talk about he literally sees things it seems other people don't see. Is that just a combination?
Hard to point out the obvious sometimes, isn't it? To grown ups.
Is that maybe that's
again.
It? Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's hard.
100%. He sees it and he wants to win baseball games. If you want to win bad enough, you'll have some tough conversations. But if winning doesn't trump maybe hurting a guy's feelings, he's not going to say it. Think about that. If I like Kevin Barker a ton, but he's not cutting the corners tight enough and not making it to third base on a single to right field, but we're friends. If I want to win, Barker, cut the daggum corner tighter.
Yeah.
Like, we're here to win. We can be buddies in the offseason. We're here to win. Yeah, you ain't getting it done, man. And that's what DeMarlo will be able to do.
There was a lot of talk in spring training about, obviously, communication, new approach, team-wide approach. I can see Barker rolling his eyes.
Just doesn't work that way.
You were down there.
Hitting's individual.
I'll say this, Caleb. Both you guys were down there. They slugged it just spring training, but they slugged better.
Absolutely.
Than they did at any point last year, I would argue.
Their takes were better too.
Yeah.
Did you see something that suggested to you that there is going to be a tangible difference in what we are going to see from this team in terms of approach starting today compared to what we saw last season?
Yeah, you hope so. You hope that what you saw in spring training transitions and that the game plan that they have, whatever it is going to transition. The biggest thing is when it really counts, that's when guys start hitting the panic button when they're 0-4. Like, you're not panicking one bit in spring training if you've got an approach and you're trying to work on something that doesn't work out. You just go back the next day. But when it really matters, it's easy to hit the panic button really quickly. But I do think that the emphasis on slug is legit. It's real. I feel like you've got to be able to do a couple things to slug. It's hard to slug all around the outside of the zone. It's hard to slug in all areas. Most guys have a general idea where they can slug, and that's where they look and that's where they go after. If you are looking to get on base, it's a bit of a different approach. So if you're looking to slug, which it looked like they were trying to do, you're naturally going to eliminate some parts of the zone. And that's what big league hitting is. It's all about eliminating certain stuff to put yourself in a position where you can do the most that your body or the team is asking you to do.
Boy, you're good. Eflin, today, that's what he does, right? He nibbles.
Nibbler.
He wants you to get yourself out. The approach, I mean, it's sort of team-wide, right? I swing at what I can do damage on. You chase this dude, it's going to be like quick way. It'll be the seventh thing in an hour and a half, right?
Exactly.
Can they do it? Like, can they lay off the backdoor cutter or the backdoor two-seamer or, you know, the little get-me-over breaking ball? Can they do that, you think?
The interesting thing about this and what he brings is these are the type of guys that when you start chasing them around the zone and you start just trying to get a hit, that your chase is all over the place. When you really think about trying to slug a guy like this, that's when you might think, all right, I'm looking middle in, and if it's there, I'm letting it release. You naturally are going to take the pitch on the outer half or vice versa. But if you try and chase him around the zone, he is getting paid a lot of money to get guys out on the outer part of the zone.
Yep.
He doesn't have the stuff to beat guys in zone. So that tells you everything. He's going to nibble. He's going to get you to chase. If you can zone in on one thing and actually think slug and be more aggressive, you're probably going to take some of those cutters outside, some of those changeups under the bounce and break impulse.
Last question before we let you run, because I know you have to get ready to do Blue Jay Central. Danny Jansen's on the IL. Alejandro Kirk, Brian Servin, they'll be the catching combination right now. How difficult is it going to be? Is it going to be for Danny to come back from that injury, from the whatever piece of form, the little bone there? You caught. I've got to think that hands, wrists are absolutely the worst for a catcher.
You're using it every single day, and that it's especially because it's on the throwing
hand.
It's it's just such a unique part in how you throw the baseball, how you release the baseball. So you can kind of hold it and kind of shot put it, and you can be fine throwing it back, but actually releasing the baseball, and especially with the run game. We saw how important it was when the Blue Jays catchers were able to eliminate some of that run game. It just alleviates so much pressure for those pitchers. When it turns into a track meet, that's when things start to really speed up. Well, teams are going to know that. They're not stupid. They have MLB traderumors.com on their phones too. So they can say, okay, it's a right wrist. That's a throwing wrist. And they're going to, but this team needs Danny Jansen. I thought he took a massive step forward with his game calling. And just like we talked about with Berríos, understanding and being on high alert and knowing, okay, he's getting a little squirrely here. I'm going to rein it back in. I'm not 100% sure that Kirk has gotten to that level. It takes about 2-3 years to get there. I thought Danny was really picking that up. And so to have his game calling alone, not on the starting roster, it's going to be missed. Like, they need him back quickly.
Caleb, we are going to let you run. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
Looking forward
anytime.
To
it's awesome.
Don't say that, because we'll take you up on
it. I'll come sit next to Sunshine all day.
How about that?
Look at that beautiful shirt.
That's nice. What we really need to do, congratulations on your Under Armour contract. What we really need to do is set up a camera in the room where you guys talk before we come on air, because that was, Barker, you were in opening day.
Absolutely. It's how you get past it. It's hard.
Your favorite opening day story, because telling it.
Well, I only had one, and that was Ken Griffey Jr. That was April 3rd, 2000. It was my only one, and I can just remember I hit 6 for the Brewers, and when they announced Ken Griffey Jr., I almost passed out. Like that, I just couldn't believe I was on the same field with him, so that's all I remember.
Opening day at home versus the Twins, I had a Kevin Barker triple.
How many triples you hit in your career?
Like 3.
If you're going to do it opening days of time, did it?
I was gassed. I hit second. I was
I didn't work in this in spring training. Caleb, thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it. Have a great season. We will take a break, and we will come back with Brian Anderson. We'll take a deeper dive into the Rays and find out which player we've never heard of is going to represent the Rays in the All-Star game this year, because it always happens that way. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Four o'clock will be the time of first pitch today. 4 o'clock, 4:10, 4:07, something like that. Hit the button. It's a different studio, same thing.
I'm hitting it. There it is. Somebody's got to turn me on. In the studio, DJ.
Well, hey. Anyhow, it's Blair and Barker.
I can only push on so many times.
Well, you can only. First pitch will be around 4 o'clock. Jays and Rays. Apparently, you keep turning on the wrong what?
There's only one button that says on it.
I can't remember. I don't even know what the hell you. Apparently, you keep turning on the wrong turret. Now you really confused them. They don't teach turret. They don't teach turret at Virginia Tech or the University of Manitoba.
On.
Anyhow, 4 o'clock first pitch, Jays and Rays.
Should have been some 1 o'clock games.
From Tropicana Field.
Should have watched like 6 games already.
Yeah, probably. From Tropicana Field.
Way to go, baseball.
The Jays lineup, we've already read it out. Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Kiermaier, IKF. Biggio, for the Rays, Diaz, Lau, Rosarena, Ramirez, Paredes, Palacios, Siri, Caballero, and Pinto. Jose Berríos on the mound for the Jays, Zach Eflin for the Rays. And a reminder that you can catch Hazel May's interview with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on the interview room. Before the game, and it's that's the interview everybody was talking about all year, where the home run jacket came up.
I should say
all spring training. That was where it came up. So you can listen to that and make up your mind for yourself as to whether or not people are making a big deal.
Vladdy brought it up. She didn't ask.
So Brian Anderson is a Rays TV analyst. Brian, thank you so much for joining Kevin and me. I know it's a busy day. Happy opening day. Happy New Year. Easy question for you.
Happy opening day. Yeah, go ahead.
Easy question for you. Which Rays player will represent – Which Rays player do we not know right now who's going to end up representing this team in the All-Star game? Because every year there's somebody halfway through the year we go, look at this guy. Who's the guy that's going to surprise us? Because there's got to be, I know there's got to be somebody, Brian, in that team that's going to surprise us this year.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you say that. You know, it comes to mind a position player, a guy like Ahmed Rosario, who they brought in on a bargain basement contract, $1.5 million, and he's going to get an opportunity to play some shortstop, play some corner outfield. Mash's left-handed pitching, he's a guy that you think could really emerge for this team. They could bring out the very best in him. On the pitching side of things, you know, how about Zach Littell? Zach Littell transitioned. You know, it was the third year in a row last year that the Rays were able to successfully transition a bullpen arm into the starting rotation during the season, during a competitive season where they're consistently going to the playoffs. You know, that's hard to do. You're basically playing spring training with a guy for a month to stretch him out to be a starter. And all three cases were successful: Drew Rasmussen, Jeffrey Springs, and last year, Zach Littell. And Zach Littell has really picked it up. He had an outstanding spring training. He keeps things very simple. He attacks the zone. He trusts his stuff. And he's a guy that you could see going out there and kind of opening some eyes, as if the Rays over the years haven't had enough outstanding to elite starting pitching. You got a guy like Zach Littell that has the capability to sneak up on some people. And so I'll be looking for big things out of him. We'll see.
B.A., I heard Kyle Snyder say that this year is the deepest pen he's ever had as the pitching coach. Now, the first time I heard it or I read that he said that, I was thinking, they're one in the American League East, because that's how they win games, right? They turn it over to different arm angles and you know, getting you out with power. And if he's got more options to go to, if somebody gets hurt, that just doesn't bode well for other teams that they're having to play. Who is the most important guy in the pen? Like, Pete Fairbanks is probably the guy, right? You want to work from the ninth inning down. But a lot of the times, because he's a big guy, throws hard, the arm angles, just sometimes it has a hiccup. Is there another guy that we should be paying attention to in the pen?
You know, I think there's a couple. And so you're right. You've got to get the game to Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And so that's going to come down to a guy like Jason Adam, Sean Armstrong. They're going to be your two big right-handed eighth inning guys. And if you need a lefty, then you got, you know, Garrett Clevenger and Colin Poche. So you know, there are tons of options down there, very high quality options. But Jason Adam and Sean Armstrong, I think from the right arm side, that is where, you know, they're going to be the guys that have to get those important outs to be able to give Fairbanks that shot. And, you know, the thing is either one of those three guys, and you could probably go a little deeper than that too. You've got different guys that are going to be able to close out games over the course of a season. And isn't that what everybody's shooting for nowadays with the, you know, you're not asking your starters to go as deep into games because you're asking them to go max effort every pitch. So that's going to shorten their outings. So you have to build a bullpen that complements your starting rotation. And, oh, by the way, it shortens the game. You can get that lead through five or six. Some of these bullpens, you don't really have a chance to come back on them. And I think that really both of these teams, the Blue Jays and the Rays, when they're at full strength, sport those kind of bullpens.
So, B.A., Snell's gone. Glasnow's gone. Josh Lowe's hurt. Manuel Margot's gone. Wander Franco is suspended, I believe. I don't think we'll ever see him again in baseball. Is there a point where, I'm not going to say, is there a point where the Rays kind of stand up as a group and go, yeah, we just can't do this anymore. But the ability to survive, like just catastrophic things, big change, right? Not little change, big change. And then to have these injuries creep up as injuries do. What is it about this organization, and I know we ask you this every time, every year, what is it about this organization that allows it to not miss a beat?
Well, I think, number one, I think Eric Neander and his staff do a great job of building quality depth in the offseason. That's what the good teams do. You know, they know they've got a good team. They also know that there's going to be attrition over the course of 162 games. So they go out and they build quality depth. So that way, when the guy does go down, the next man up, it's not that far of a drop off, if at all. And so I think they do a great job of doing that. And I think that they've also, you know, over the course of the last decade, you know, plus, they have instilled a culture downstairs that the expectations are that we're going to find a way. We are going to find a way. And they do a great job of taking players in and maximizing their ability and getting the absolute best out of them. And so I you know, to your point, you know, when you're talking about this organization is never going to stand up and say, hey, this is too much for us. But I do think that the beginning of this season will be one of the most challenging parts of the season that they've had in a long time for all the reasons that you mentioned. When you think about the starting pitchers that are no longer there, trading, you know, Tyler Glass now and Robert Stevenson, so such a big part of their bullpen a year ago. He's now has gone elsewhere to Anaheim. And so, listen, your outfield. Your outfield has been completely moved around because Johnny DeLuca, who one of the guys that they got in the trade with the Dodgers, he was probably going to be your fourth outfielder to spell a Rosarena, Siri, or Josh Lowe. Well, he gets hit by a pitch, breaks his hand. He's going to miss some time. And then all of a sudden, shortly after that, Josh Lowe goes down with the oblique. And so all of a sudden, you lose your starting right fielder who had an outstanding year last year, and you lose your fourth outfielder. Good defender, a lot of speed, emerging power. So he's out. So now you turn to a guy, Richie Palacios, who's going to be in the lineup today and playing out in right field. But your outfield depth has taken a hit. Taj Bradley getting hurt in spring training on the starting rotation side has now, you know, there was some depth issues there perhaps coming into the season. Now you've got one of the guys you were counting on. He's out. So now you've got, you know, Eflin, Aaron Civale, Ryan Pepio, you know, and on down Zach Littell, who we just talked about, and Tyler Alexander, who they had picked up this offseason, is going to slide into that fifth spot. Beyond that, there's not a ton of ready-made depth. So they will be challenged. There's no question about it. But they always seem to find a way. You just can never doubt this team. We'll see. But they always seem to be able to find a way to stay afloat and make things interesting.
You mentioned Eflin. Jays are getting him today. He had a tough spring. Does that matter?
I don't think so. And I think that, you know, a lot of times you're working on things, you're working on sequencing, maybe you're working on a new pitch. There's a lot that goes into, you know, early on, you know, you give up some runs. And, you know, think about spring training, how many innings you're going to end up with? Yep. You know, 18, 20, you know what I mean? So you have one rough outing early, and that's going to skew your ERA for the rest of the spring. You're going to wear it, and it's going to look a lot worse than maybe it actually is. And I think that he finished really strong. I got to see him in his last tune-up start 5 days ago, and he gave up a wind-aided home run. But outside of that, he was pretty outstanding. And the thing that makes Zach so tough is he's not completely overpowering. You know, he's got pretty good juice on his fastball. He's not going to be up there 97, 98, 99. But what he does, you know, most pitchers, they threaten you either north and south. They work up and down. Maybe a riding fastball, a good curveball, and a change. Or you got guys that work you in and out, you know, sinker slider. He's a guy that with his arsenal and the way that he uses it, he threatens all of the strike zone. He can be an east-west guy with his two different breaking balls. He's got, you know, a curveball and a sweeper that have really good action to the glove side. He's got a really good turbo two-seamer, too, that he can run, you know, away from lefties and in on righties. So he can beat you east and west. But he's also got a curveball with depth that can beat you below the zone, a changeup that can beat you below the zone. And occasionally, he will pop a four-seamer up at your letters and surprise you and get you up there. So you really have to, as a hitter, know that you have to cover the entire strike zone. And what makes him even more effective in doing that is he's got excellent command. He walked 24 hitters last year in 177 and two-thirds innings. That's just over one per nine. I think George Kirby with Seattle was the only guy that was better. And so he can command all of those pitches to all four quadrants of the zone and beyond, and he really puts a lot of stress on a hitter. And if he's on and the command is really there that day, it's going to be a lot of mishit baseballs. And that's his game.
Absolutely. B.A., if you were giving advice to the Jays hitters, would there be advice? Because listening to you, I mean, it sounds like they basically have no chance. Like, if they're chasing the corners, like, it's going to be tough. You can't chase them. Like, you got to pick a side for me. And if you don't, it's going to – like, last year, he led baseball in pitches per inning at 14 and a half. That's a really cool stat for a guy that's got almost six pitches, right? So if there's an advice you would give a lineup, what would it be?
It would be take advantage of the mistakes, because there will be mistakes made. You know, you go out there as a starting pitcher and you throw 100 pitches, you're going to leave some out over the heart of the plate. Can't miss him.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to be a guy that can consistently overpower you in the strike zone. So when he catches the meaty part of the strike zone, you have got to capitalize. And if you do that, then you have a chance to put together a nice day offensively. But if you allow those pitches to get by you, you foul them off, you miss them, and now all of a sudden he starts darting those edges, now you're in big trouble. You just have to, and I think that's true of almost any pitcher, but especially with Zach, because he's such a command guy. You know, we have a game right now that's full of stuff guys, but not a lot of command guys, and he is a command guy, so you got to capitalize on his mistakes.
BA, the Trop's got new turf. Does that matter? Is there, you know, when I heard that, I was thinking the Underground City, boy, they're going to come up with something like, you know, they're going to use that as some kind of advantage. Have you seen it? Like, are they hitting more ground balls? I would just think it would just be easier on the legs. No, for the outfielders, is there any advantage for the Rays?
Well, yeah, you know, here's the thing. This is what I'll tell you about this new turf. Number one, it looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks like a baseball field. It's got the striping, you know, like you typically see when it's mowed grass. So the aesthetics of it are really, really cool. And this is what I will tell you. You know, a lot of times they use ground up tires or rubber, those mm-hmm. black little pellets mm-hmm. that is within the turf, you know, to, you know, maintain its structure or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. whatever reason it's there for. This is what I'll tell you about the Rays' new turf. I noticed as line drives were getting hit into the outfield, it was kicking up almost a sand colored mm-hmm. substance. So I asked the guy, I said, what's the new stuff out there? And it's coconut husk that they have gone throughout the outfield and the infield. It's coconut husk, and it's got it has a you know, it looks more like sand. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Along the warning track, because the warning track is also turf, they have sprinkled walnut shell. And the reason that they did that, and I guess they're the only team in baseball that's done it, the walnut shell has an audible sound when you step on it. So as guys are going back for a ball deep and they get to the warning track, they're going to hear a crunch under their feet, and that's going to let them know, on top of the difference in color, the sound will let them know, oh, the wall's right here. So I thought that was a pretty interesting aspect of it. Other than that, the way that I've heard, and I think this goes true for all of this new field turf that ends up getting put in, is that it's playing a little slower than they remembered from a season ago. And so I think that with the more wear and tear, you know, you think that it'll speed up. We'll have to wait and see. But I thought that the substances that they have put within that turf was pretty interesting. Coconut husk throughout the field, and then on the warning track, walnut shells.
Only the Rays. Only the Rays.
Yeah, right?
The Rays. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Not only are they a smart organization, but they're an environmentally conscious organization. BA, thanks for doing this, man, as always. You're the best. Be well. Have a great season.
Yeah,
hey?
Absolutely.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Yes. Well, I'm sure we'll, yep, absolutely. Happy opening day, everybody, and go Leafs go.
There you go. Yeah, go Leafs go. That's right. Take care.
See you, buddy.
Brian Anderson. Well, there you go. You're not going to hear any other, I guarantee you there's no other show that's going to be talking about walnut husks or coconut husks and walnut shells on the field.
Yeah, that sounds to me like they're trying to keep it from bouncing too high. That's why, now, look, I'm just reading this. And it's intriguing, but it's just, it's, you know, funny that you would hear Kevin Cash talking about that and you know, what's going on and can they use that? Is it slower in the infield? Will they try and bunt more? Would they try and do things to get on base? Because they are talking about trying to steal more bases.
Yes, they
It's the Rays. Like, the Rays are coming up with things, right, to make up for the woes, you know, because nobody's picking them.
The Rays will drive you nuts.
They will.
They will drive you
nuts. Yeah, they will.
You see what I did there?
You did.
Although I got to say that, but wait, maybe we have to stop treating Tropicana Field like it's a house of horrors. The Jays were 3-4 there last year, 4-5 the year before, 4-6. That's not bad. And then it gets to 3-6, 2-8, and 2-7. But they, you know, it hasn't quite been the Death Valley for them. It's been in the past. You know what we haven't talked about is John Schneider.
Yeah.
And the segue to that is, this tells you something. First of all, Kevin Cash is the longest tenured manager in Rays history. He's 16 wins away from surpassing Joe Maddon as the Rays' all-time winningest manager. This despite being the seventh youngest active manager in the majors. We forget about that. Just what a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Cash is. John Schneider. Last year, we know how the decision was handled with Jose Berrios and Yusei Kikuchi in the game in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
We know about the news conference afterwards. We know about the follow-up news conference with Ross and then the kind of news conference to clean everything up
mm-hmm.
by Mark Shapiro. I know you're close to John. I'm not looking for state secrets here or anything. How do you think John feels right now going into this season?
I'm told it was taken care of. Now, to what extent, I have no idea.
Whatever needed to be taken care of was taken care of.
Well, basically, the GM came out and rolled the bus over John. Like, hey, you know, again, well,
it will take care of it in one way.
It's but. All, you know, we're all in this together. We're all pulling in the same direction. The conversation that we had before you went up to the mic was different than what you were selling to the fan base. So I was told that it was taken care of and you know, everybody hugged it out and you know, you love me as much as I love you, and we're all pulling in the same direction. And you know, the players sound like they trust John again, which I think that's the most important part of that. You know, again, I get back to that. How many people like their bosses? It's rare. Like, we do. Absolutely.
We do.
The bosses here have been very good to us, but it's rare. You know, it is. And baseball's no different. I hated most of my bosses when I played. That just was part of it. Like, and I think there's a little bit to that, right? It's – you know, just let me do my job and we'll figure the rest out. And I think that's where they're at, right? There's a part of us that will give you every information that you need to make the team as best it can be. Mm-hmm. It's up to you and the coaching staff to fill in the blanks. And I think now one side is staying out of the way of the other side. And I think the other side is very happy about that. So,
you know,
now you can, if anything goes wrong, you can absolutely point the finger at one side of it, and that's the coaching staff.
You know that our friend Jim Bowden has picked John Schneider as a manager most likely to be fired during the year and replaced by Don Mattingly. And I mean, there haven't been – we do this every year, but the fact of the matter is there haven't been a lot of midseason managerial firings. It's not as much of a thing necessarily as it used to be. But
he gets fired, it's the player's fault. It's not John's fault. I know you want to fire John because of what happened. I'm not saying you, but I'm saying the collection of people, the group that wants John fired. I get it. Like the way the season ended the last couple of years, you can point the finger. He's the guy. It comes with the territory.
Mm.
You know, you're a young manager. You're going to be yelled and screamed at when it doesn't work out. But this year, for me, it's all about the players. The players have come out and said, enough of the excuses, enough of the talk.
Yeah.
It's time to get it down and get it singing. So I'm gonna trust that. Now, if something goes wrong, it's Bo's fault. It's Vladdy's fault. It's George Springer's fault. It's Dalton Varsho's fault. It's Alejandro Kirk's fault. It's Danny Jansen's fault for not staying on the field. It's the rotation's fault. It's the bullpen's fault for not getting it done. It's baseball IQ's fault. It ain't the coaching staff's fault. So that's where I'm at in this. That's where they're at now with this organization is. It's all about the players. There's no more excuses about the coaches.
Do you think that based on the roster John Schneider has right now, do you think that he has enough? I'm going to leave aside the bullpen because that's obviously a different issue, but do you think that he's got better options this year than he's had in the past off the bench?
Yeah, I don't know if does the bench matter? Vogelbach going to change games? I mean, he might win one or two games.
Well,
I don't know.
That one or two games is the difference between 90 wins and 88
it's,
wins.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, it's fair. Look, I think it's more about the first four guys in the lineup than it is about what's on the bench. Again, I think he likes that he has a contact guy in Clement. I think he likes the Davis Schneider thing where it's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Davis Schneider is not a finished product. He has giant holes to swing, and you could argue he's an easy out. But they like the – you know, that he has an actual chance of pulling the ball in the air and hitting a three-run homer if they give him a chance to do that. And they like the Vogelbach thing. They like the lefty-righty power threat that they have. So the answer to your question is probably yes. But that ain't, for me, going to be the reason why they make the playoffs. It's going to be because of the other reasons that I just mentioned yesterday. And you rolled your eyes at me, the first four guys in the rotation, four guys in the lineup,
now
and a plethora of dudes in the pen. Everybody's got to pull their weight. if everybody pulls their weight because of where the Orioles at, because of where the Yankees are at, because the Rays, if you dig into the Rays, they're not as bad as everybody's making them out to be. They're going to be a handful. Like, they got lots of pitching. They're going to field the baseball the way they're supposed to. They're going to try and steal bases to make up for what they're not doing offensively. They're going to be a handful. It's the Rays. Well, and then you got the Rangers. You got the Mariners. And you got some other things in the West. So everybody's got to pull their weight. It's just not one guy for me. It's just not one guy.
As I've said, I just think this may be the year. And I've not been that guy that has said this is the year the Rays magic runs out. Far from it. I've been the guy that usually picks the Rays to win the division. That's just so much. I mean, just hearing Brian Anderson go down the list of guys who aren't there. Like, think about the guys who aren't there for an organization that's got very, very limited payroll.
I mean, a lot of people have their doubts about the Jays. You think this will be the best job John has ever done if the Jays make the playoffs? And you think that this will change people's mind about John Schneider if they do make the playoffs?
They've got to win a playoff round. Making the playoffs
has nothing to do with making the playoffs.
No.
Because of what they were trying to get in the offseason.
Nope.
There you go.
Making the playoffs is a good year for this team is not making the playoffs.
So you may not bring John back if they get beat in the first round of the playoffs.
Absolutely. Probably not.
There you go.
And I'll tell you what.
Okay, it's fair.
If that happens and they get beaten in the first round of the playoffs, he isn't the only guy I'm not bringing back. I'm just saying, you got to win a playoff series. And, you know, no more participation awards.
No more talk.
You got to win a playoff series.
It's time, Jeff.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, Jason Stark will join us. It's opening day. This is Blair and Barker at Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're an hour away from first pitch.
Yes.
At Tropicana Field, the Jays taking on the Rays in the season opener. Opening day for the Jays. Jose Berríos on the mound. Zach Eflin for the Tampa Bay Rays. Very seldom do we get a chance to bring our next guest on.
I know.
Jason Stark. And drop a nugget of information on him.
Uh-oh.
That he doesn't know. Now
I'm nervous because I don't know either.
Uh-oh. Jason Stark of The Athletic joins us. I'm hoping you don't know this because we just found out about it recently, and it was from our friend Brian Anderson. Do you know that the Rays have put walnut shells down on the outfield warning track to alert players to the fact that they are on the outfield warning track? They have new turf, and that instead of that rubber compound that they sprinkle all over artificial turf, they're using coconut husks. Did you know that?
I do know this.
Oh, come on.
I actually talked to Kevin Cash about it just the other day.
Oh.
Think about this. Their field is made of coconut husks and walnut chips or whatever it is. It sounds like a drink you'd order at happy hour.
It's amazing. It's just,
only the Rays.
Barker's convinced that the underground city. Yeah. They've done some sort of scientific experiment, and this is going to create. It's going to, I don't know, something to do with air currents. And
nobody's picking us. Oh yeah, new field.
Unbelievable. Okay. Chills. I thought
I can actually tell you something about it. Because of this stuff, and because it was just put down, the infield is going to play super slow, really slow for. Certainly this series and quite a while, it sounds like.
All right. Well, there you go. That's all I got.
Walnut, coconut.
Well, you knew he'd know.
I know.
Come on.
I know. I knew he'd know. Reading your article, 25 numbers that define baseball and set the stage for the season, Jason. Happy opening day. Happy New Year, by the way. Of those numbers, is there a number that sums up Major League Baseball right now, not the state of the game, but is there a number that if someone said to you, Jason, I'm a new baseball fan, I'm interested in baseball, what number do I need to know? What number would you say?
Okay, well, I mean, there's a lot of numbers in that piece that I would say tell that story, but I think it's $1 billion because I'm pretty confident that in baseball this year, teams are going to spend $1 billion paying players not to play because they're on the injured list. We just missed $1 billion. That'll happen this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over $500 million goes to injured pitchers. I think this is the looming crisis in the game is no pitchers stay healthy, yeah. Right? None. Mm-hmm. Of the 30 guys who started opening day last year, 11 of them aren't even on an active roster this year, mostly because they're hurt.
Yeah.
And like, look at the list of guys in the game, most innings, most wins. None of them are pitching opening day. We only got one pitcher with 100 wins pitching opening day. And it's just because the sport cannot control the rate of injury and especially pitching injury. You guys agree?
Yeah. Jason, first question would be, does Major League Baseball care if pitchers get hurt? Because if they did, they would think of ways to bring back the real pitcher, right? Not so much a thrower as a pitcher. It just seems to me like they like the product. They don't really care if these pitchers are getting hurt.
Kevin, you cannot imagine the intensity of this conversation, the answer to that question that you just asked within the sport. Because, look, obviously, everybody would tell you, yeah, we're very concerned about this. You know, we don't want to pay $500 million to pitchers not to pitch. That's terrible. We got to fix this. But what are they doing to fix it? They're talking about a lot of stuff that would address what you just mentioned. And, you know, I'm actually in the process of writing a big piece about this with Ken Rosenthal. But in order to really fix this, I think you just described it so well. You can't have a team that throws 40 pitchers out there every year, all of them trying to throw as hard as they can throw.
Yep.
Right? And once one goes down, just bring on the next one. One, you put a guy from AAA who throws 98. This isn't working. It's not creating more balls in play, which is important to the sport as an entertainment product. And it's diminishing the role, the prominence of the starting pitcher in the sport, which is hurting the entertainment product. And I just said it. They're going to spend $1 billion this year paying players not to play because on one hand, they care. On the other hand, as you just said, Kevin, do they really?
You think, Jason, that is one of the reasons that it's so hard to repeat as a champion in baseball?
Absolutely.
You know, the pitching is – the arm wears down, right? The arm is not bionic. The arm wears down. Is that one of the reasons it's – what are we, 23 years without a repeat champion? I mean, that makes – when I'm reading that, that makes me look at those Giants teams that won every other year. Like, that's some sort of freaking dynasty the way stuff is now.
Yeah, look, there's not just one reason, but that is a reason. You know, the Dodgers and the Braves were the two best teams in the sport last year. Do we agree?
Yeah.
And what was the state of their rotations when they got to October? Could you win the World Series with what they had left, what they had healthy?
Nope.
Obviously not. Okay. Yeah. So they didn't even win a series, either of them. So, yeah, that's a huge – it's a huge cause and effect. You're absolutely right.
The new rules, which one do you think will matter the most to good teams?
You know, I think what's really interesting to me, Kevin, is how teams are going to adapt to what they learned last year from year one of the last year's new rules. I don't think anything this year is going to make a huge impact. The obstruction rule at the bases in April, there's going to be some stuff, okay? There's going to be some yelling, some screaming, weird calls, Angel Hernandez, like, get ready for that. But that'll settle in real quick. What's really interesting to me is teams looked at the whole base-stealing thing last year. The success rate was over 80% and went up as the season went on. And I had a general manager say to me, if the success rate is 80%, we're not stealing enough. You know, so I wrote a piece about this maybe a week and a half ago, and like Kevin Cash could not have been more upfront about what the Rays' plans are. They're going to steal 200, 250 bases, whatever it is, because they don't think if you do the prep that base stealers can be thrown out at a rate that would make it worth being conservative. And so you're going to have that whole element, more action, more base running, more base stealing. It's fun. And then teams trying to figure out ways to combat that. Better throwing catchers. You're seeing some of that. Like a lot of slide step work this spring. Teams trying to make their pitchers figure out how to be quicker to the plate because you have to. If you're not, it's a track meet. And so that to me is the story beneath the story in the sport this year, watching how teams adjust to that.
Yep.
Jason, are the Texas Rangers going to be able to keep body and soul together enough until they get one of or both DeGrom and Scherzer back and maybe end that run of 23 years without a World Series or without a repeat champion? Because, I mean, that lineup is so good. And Wyatt Langford, if anything, makes it even better.
Yeah, that's a win the World Series group of position players. There is no doubt. If the big debate is which Ranger is going to win the Rookie of the Year award, Wyatt Langford or Evan Carter, you know your team's pretty darn good. Yeah. But it's just hard to look at the state of their first half rotation and think they're going to be in position to win again. They could, but I don't know what they're going to get out of Max Scherzer. I don't know what they're going to get out of DeGrom. I don't know who's going down because they all do.
Mm-hmm.
Payroll's an issue for them because their long-term TV picture is so murky. I think they're going to finish third in that division. They might make the playoffs, but I don't see how they're better than the Astros and Mariners right now.
Jason, which organization has the most pressure going into the season?
How is it not the Dodgers?
You could say the Yankees. Yankees, maybe?
That's an interesting debate because if the Yankees don't win, it's certainly possible that Brian Cashman gets fired and that Aaron Boone gets fired. But I don't know how many years in a row I've said this now and they don't.
Right.
But, maybe Gerrit Cole, is he going to make 22 starts or two? You know, maybe that's a get out of jail free card for those guys. So how is it not the Dodgers after signing Ohtani and signing Yamamoto and spending $1.1 billion on free agents and trading for Tyler Glasnow and extending him and extending Will Smith for $100 million? Can you be more all in than that?
Talk about the Dodgers. I wonder if they can win the World Series with Mookie Betts playing short. That would be the thing I would have to ask.
I would never bet against Mookie to do anything.
Yeah.
Anything, you know? Last year, he played right field, he played second base, and he played shortstop for that team. And you can make a case he was their best right fielder, best second baseman, and best shortstop.
Yeah.
But he's never done this. He started 12 games in his professional career or in his big league career at shortstop before opening day. And there's never been a guy in the history of the sport who followed his career path. So it's a great unknown. And then I don't know, him and Max Muncy on the left side.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how that's gonna go. Gavin Lux at second. Don't know how that's gonna go. Freddie Freeman, I'm pretty sure he'll be okay. But there are questions about the Dodgers, as star-studded and compelling as they are, not the least of which is that Ohtani guy.
Mm. Yeah, is that? I don't think we've had a chance to talk since his news conference. Do you think that's going to be at all Ohtani? That will be distraction at all for the Dodgers? Like my friend Mr. Barker just started rattling off names: Freeman, Betts, Kershaw. I mean, they have guys who'll be able to handle it. Dave Roberts seems to be, seems to have kind of understood that he's going to have to take a little bit of a lead here as well. Do you think that'll be an issue for that clubhouse, or is it just, just so much noise?
Well, where's it going?
Do you
know where it's going?
Right.
Right now it's a mess. It's noise, but it could turn into a disaster. Couldn't it? I mean, even after Shohei talked, there are so many more questions. What was the one thing he didn't do at his press conference, Jeff? Answer questions. Yeah. Right? So I don't know the answers to the questions, but that version that he threw out there the other day, it better be the right version, because there are three investigations at least going on here. One by Major League Baseball, one by the Internal Revenue Service into the wire transfers of $4.5 million to a bookie, and then the other by the federal law enforcement in the states. They've been looking at the activities of the bookie for months, and that's how Shohei and Ipe, the translator, got ensnared in this.
Yeah, I'm sure they have Hall of Famers everywhere on that team. I'm sure they'll figure it out. But I
don't know, though.
I'm sure.
Is Freddie Freeman going to call the IRS guys? Can you slow it down a bit here?
I don't think, every teammate cares about what every other teammate's doing off the field. Like, it's you have your own problems, right? I think.
Yeah, look, obviously, baseball is a sport where you've got to perfect that art of tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And there's every day it's survive in advance, but... All right, what happened after the second game of the season while they're trying to pack up and fly across the Pacific? They had to have a team meeting to brief them on the earthquake that was about to hit. A lot of ripple effects from that earthquake. And I know earthquakes are pretty common in L.A., but they've never seen one quite like this. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe his version checks out. Maybe at some point this just becomes a thing about Ipe and not Shohei. Well, we don't know that yet. They don't know that yet. We don't know where it's leading. We don't know the next revelation that's coming. And I'm pretty confident Shohei's not going to stand there at his locker and answer all these questions. So who's going to answer them, guys?
Yeah, that's
his teammates.
Yeah, yep. That is. And that, having covered Barry Bonds' pursuit of that home run record, we all know what players love when national media go up to them, because the focal point of the story isn't talking, and say, so what do you think about Barry's chase? Yeah, that was, I still remember going up to Steve Klein, who I knew from the Expos, and chatting, and I said to him, are you, and you're laughing because the type of personality Steve Klein was. I said, just out of interest sake, are you like taking any souvenir or anything back from this pursuit? He looked at me and said, are you nuts? No, I'm not. I want this over.
I had some conversations with Steve Klein along the way myself.
That's probably no great
kind
surprise.
Of entertaining in his own Steve Kleinish way.
Yes, he was. The Blue Jays. What are your expectations for them?
I think they're the sleeping giant in the league, maybe even in the sport. I know they have bullpen questions right now. But let's assume Jordan Romano is going to be okay, right? Let them just try to analyze their team. Mm-hmm. Best rotation in the AL East, top five in the sport, assuming Kevin Gausman is fine. And I got to see him throw last week, and that's going to work. Top five bullpens potentially in the sport if Jordan Romano is okay. Maybe the best defensive team in the sport. We agree? And then
absolutely.
So much upside offensively. The runners in scoring position thing, that should not happen again, right? Yeah. It's too random. Vlad and Bo Bichette look so good this spring. George Springer looked better. Dalton Varsho looked way more comfortable. I was watching a Blue Jays game last week, and I start paying attention to the numbers at the end of the spring. And when I looked at the stats on the stat sheet behind all these guys, I didn't realize what an amazing spring so many of them had. And like Vlad's bat speed and Bo's determination to take another step, it just jumped off the field at you. I saw the Red Sox a couple of weeks ago. One of them said to me, we were talking about the division and the Jays, and he said, that team will win three or four more games just because Justin Turner is on their team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've heard that from people about Justin Turner as well. Jason, we're going to let you run. Appreciate this, man. Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thank
you so much.
Sorry, we
had some technical issues there. We apologize to Jason. We apologize to our listeners and our viewers. But
absolutely.
Justin Turner, neither of us are big in the whole clubhouse thing.
Winning makes a good clubhouse.
Correct. But I do wonder, I was thinking about this when Caleb was in here. If you're Bo Bichette, you're probably feeling better about moving into the third spot, knowing you've got Justin Turner behind you, than moving into the third spot last year, knowing that you would have Brandon Belt, Dalton Varsho, Matt Chapman, whoever was there. And I wonder if that maybe isn't part of this factor here, too. Because, Vladdy's the one that talks about protection, but everybody likes a little bit of protection. If I'm Bo and I got that guy behind me,
yeah, I'm sure it doesn't hurt, but I'm sure it's the conversation between him and John saying that you're our best hitter. You make our team better by being
correct.
In this spot.
Correct, but he was their best hitter last year.
You make people around you better. You know, maybe he wasn't buying into it last year. Maybe he's seen it firsthand that, Vladdy needs a little help. Like, he can't do it all on his own, and he needs a little push in the right direction, and maybe him hitting behind him would be a little easier for him. Just the quality of the at-bat. That's what it's about, right?
Would this have been more of an issue if we were talking about Bo Bichette after his first or second year? Would it be more of an issue?
They paid him enough money into certain things.
Yeah, they didn't go to arbitration with him this year.
It would be interesting to see if they start losing a lot, and then it gets very individual, and, if he doesn't like hitting third.
Or if his...
Hitting third. I don't like it. It's not my fault.
Well, and not
I'm
only
doing
that,
my thing.
What do we talk about? What does Bo always talk about when it comes to stats? First thing, batting average.
Yep.
Batting average.
Yeah, yeah.
If Bo's 265, 270.
Well, John was listening too about the batting average, right? It's what you're hitting with runners in scoring position. The batting average matters. I mean, if he's hitting, 350-ish, it only bodes well for your team. It's better for your team. Again, they know they got to get off to a good start. And then it would be a little easier with Bo coming up when those at-bats that really matter more times than other guys are coming up. And it's beneficial if he can help guys around him. That's what really good, if not great, hitters are doing. So I like it. There's nothing wrong with that when it comes to you're putting your team first, at least early on.
Let me give you some Jays defensive numbers, because Jason Stark talked about that. They had 107 error-free games last year. That was the most in team history. Gold Glove winners, again, you can take it for what it's worth, but Berríos, Chapman, Kiermaier. The club won the Yale Gold Glove Team Award for the first time ever. And according to Sports Info Solutions, Toronto fielders recorded a total of 82 defensive runs saved. That was the most in the majors by a lot.
Yeah, it should not go down. Like, IKF can play third. I mean, he's not a great hitter, but he can play third.
It should not be.
So you shouldn't miss a beat over there.
It should not be worse.
If anything, side to side, he might help out Bo a little bit more, right? I mean, he's got a strong enough arm. He's a very smart guy. Like, he'll line himself up in the right positions. He'll be in the right spot. He'll throw it to the place he's supposed to throw it to. It's just offensively you have to worry about. So they're going to catch the ball. It's just getting the big hit when they're supposed to be getting the hit against a good pitcher. Eflin's is going to be a tall task. This is what I said. Like, this is a good matchup for them. To see if what they've been yelling and screaming about, I mean, they have been yelling and screaming about. We've been screaming more about it than they have. But they've been saying it. That, do swing at what you can do damage on. This guy is going to force you to do it, or it will be a quick game, and he's going to take them behind the woodshed if that's not the case. If they're chasing early, he'll have the 14-pitch inning, and it'll be the seventh in a hurry because he's going to work through this lineup. So hopefully they go out and do their thing, and they take the pitches they're supposed to take, and they force him in the zone, and somebody runs into one, because that's what you have to do against good pitching. You got to run into one.
What will you be looking for early from Jose Berríos? We talked about the lineup, Diaz, Lau, Arozarena, Ramirez, Paredes, Palacios, Suri, Caballero, Pinto. There's only two lefties in that lineup. That is Lau and Palacios. The rest are righties. We know that Jose Berríos was working on the cutter. We talked to Caleb about that first part. What are you going to be looking for from Jose Berríos early in this game?
Well, that's consistent release point. That's what it's always been. That's why they eliminated the windup. To have him be able just to consistently have the same release point over and over and over again. right, and stay in your lanes. You know, if Kirky sets up away, that's your lane. If he sets up in, that's your lane, right? It wasn't because he had a windup. He had a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have that release point to stay in your lanes. That's one thing you need to sort of look at, right? If he wants to throw a sinker, it should sink, and his misses will be better. When he gets in trouble, it's the elevated ball, and it's in the middle of the plate. When the sinker's down and the slurve's down, like it was most of the year last year, he will be really good. And, you know, don't abuse the cutter. I wouldn't even know if I would look for that. I know he's got two lefties. He will throw it to righties. It will make the slurve better.
It would be a situational pitch for him, wouldn't it?
I don't know that. Like, stay with who you are. Beginning of the season matters to these guys. Like, they want to get off to good starts. He had a really, really good spring training. Like,
yes,
he was doing in the offseason to, you know, physically be able to maintain velocity, right? Velocity on the breaking ball or the slurve is a big deal for him. Velocity on the changeup is a big deal. Velocity on the two-seamer is a big deal. Velocity on the four-seamer is a big deal because he wants to go up with that to lefties. He wants to be able to throw the front hip two-seamer. Velocity on that matters. Maintaining that throughout an entire, start for him is a big deal. So him having more strength in his lower half, being able to repeat everything is a big deal. So, you know, it's strike one. It's efficiency with two strikes. It's not abusing that little nice toy he's got. If he does that, he'll give the lineup a chance to win a game because he's a good pitcher.
By the way, for those of you who aren't following the other game in progress, would it surprise you to know that Mike Trout homered in his first at-bat?
No, he might win the MVP. He stays on the field. He's
You could argue
he's the best player in baseball.
No.
When he's healthy.
No.
Oh, you say that like they're that's the only reason, it's because he plays 60 games a
Judge
year.
Judge Ohtani. I'd put them ahead of him.
Okay. I mean, you were the guy
who called Aaron Judge the best player in baseball.
Two months ago. No, you said who would I want to have the at bat? And I don't even know the other name you mentioned, but it was some silly guy that you shouldn't be mentioning.
Adley Rutschman or somebody
else. Yeah, he worked.
Anyhow.
Yeah. So
it worked.
That's what I was talking about. But you can't – like, he's in that top five when he's healthy. And staying healthy, he's top five.
We are, a little more than a half hour away from first pitch at Tropicana Field. The walnut coconut husk. You know I'm not going to let that go.
Well,
it's the underground city. And they coconut husk laden.
They're not just doing it because
– There's a reason. There's a reason for
it. It didn't bounce it high. You threw somebody up. Wins them a game. Like, it's little things like that.
Somebody's going to end up.
The underground city. Figured it out.
Going to have a hard time letting that go. Jose Berríos against Zach Eflin. We're going to take a break and come
back. There's a tunnel.
Take you right up.
We'll get you to it.
All the khakis. You got to have the secret password and the secret code.
You do. It's on their khakis.
It is. We'll take you right up the first pitch. It's Blair and Parker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to our friends along the Sportsnet Radio Network. And if you're watching us on Sportsnet, it is Blair and Barker. Half an hour.
Yes.
The first pitch at Tropicana Field.
Talking's over. It's time. It is.
Jose Berríos on the mound for the Blue Jays. Zach Eflin for the Tampa Bay Rays. And we talked about this a little bit at the top of the show with Jose Berríos. We know how the 2023 season ended last year, the postseason ended last year, with Jose Berríos coming out of the game for Yusei Kikuchi. And as we've said, the Jays lost that game because they couldn't get a hit and they made some atrocious base running mistakes.
Fair.
But the point is, after that game, John Schneider, there was confusion as to how that decision was made and where it came from and what went into it and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Jose Berríos talked a little bit about it in spring training this year. And he was asked about it yesterday in his media availability. And this is Jose Berríos. And what I like about Jose Berríos is he didn't drop the you know, I don't want to talk about it. I mean, past is past. He's actually talked about this in a couple of occasions. This is what he said yesterday when he's asked about how that playoff game unwound for the Blue Jays.
That's the only thing I wanted. Like, just be honest with me, be transparent, and they will. So that's why we're able to be in the same page now and turn that bad experience or situation. So, like I say, this is a new year, new opportunity, and I think we're going to start like, really well.
He mentioned earlier this spring as well, Kevin. He was asked about this. He said, for 4 or 5 days, I felt like the worst pitcher in baseball. And his point was, and he was really, I think he was really the one person who was able to sort of put it in a manner that we could, the people could understand when he said, yes, they spoke to me about doing this, but I'm a competitor. And essentially what he said is, I was doing so well that I was still surprised by it. And I think that's the thing that I keep getting back to. It's great to have a plan, but what if the guy who's got 4 or 5 years left in his contract is giving you the best? It's the best he's pitched all year. So I just found that, I found that really, and I think it's fitting in a lot of ways that that Jose Berríos gets the start today in the opener because of that.
Yeah, I don't think that's why. If Kevin Gausman was
not,
healthy,
it's not why.
Kevin,
but I'm saying from a story point of view.
I mean, if it was Bassett starting today, you could say that.
Well,
just because there's no Kevin Gausman, and you know, between the two, you'd probably rather have Berríos starting today than you know, it just gives you a better chance to win. I don't think one guy or the other would be upset about that. I think they're all pulling in the same direction, especially the rotation. I know talking to Pete Walker, that's the message sort of every single day is we're all in this together. At least that little group right there has been the conversation. So,
we're going to be talking about.
Well,
it's odd because, look, it's just, you know, the two playoff games John Schneider has managed. One, he admitted he took the two big games he's managed, the two big decisions he had to make. Mm-hmm. He admitted 2 years ago he got it wrong with Kevin Gausman.
Yeah.
He got it wrong with Kevin Gausman. He took him out too early, and he was right. And then, you know, we saw the way it unwound last year as well. It's a backstory to this. It's a backstory to Jose Berríos
getting the start. I'm not sure it is for those guys anymore. I think it's more about we make it a bigger deal than they do. I think they're over it. Well, I think he would never talk about it again if people didn't come up and ask him the question. I really do think that.
John Schneider did his pregame availability a couple of minutes ago, and he was asked about going to Jose Berríos on opening day. Is Chris Bassett a candidate? And just in general, his what he expects from Jose in this start.
He's been one of the best pitchers in the league, really, for his entire career. I think last year we just kind of, you know, got back to being him. You know, without Gauz doing it, I think, you know, he's kind of, it could be him or Chris, but I think his body of work last year, off season, what he's doing right now, we feel totally comfortable and confident with him out there tonight. And hopefully for 31 or two more in the regular season. But he kind of checks every box. He's prepared, executes at a high level, and matches up really well against Gauz.
The identity of this team as far as offensive-wise, what do you expect this team to be based on what you saw this
year? Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's 9 guys or really 13 guys kind of pulling in the same direction. We're going to need, you know, probably more damage, more power than what we showed last year from guys at the top of the order. They're aware of that. We want them to be dangerous. We want them to take their best swings. And then the complementary pieces at kind of the middle bottom, you know, we feel really good about the contact ability, which kind of, you know, evaded us last year. So I think it's you're letting your big guys do their thing. And it's not to put pressure on them, but they're really good for a reason. And adding JT to the mix has been awesome. So I'm looking forward to, you know, the same approach kind of carrying over into the season.
You guys are being, like, thrown right into the fire to kick off. How can that be a positive when you're facing a team like the Rays and then you've got the Astros and then you're...
Yeah, I think getting them early, you know, you want to see how you match up, how you line up. Our division's tough, and I think, you know, facing these guys and the Yanks with Houston in the middle, it really says, okay, what are you guys all about? You know, and it's us saying the same thing to them. So the guys are looking forward to it. You know, it evens out. And every team is good in the big leagues. You know, teams that, you know, weren't so much last year, they've all made improvements, and baseball's tough. But I think it's cool to face a team that you're familiar with. Guys are excited for it. And it kind of goes with what we've been saying in spring where, all right, it's time to kind of grow up and move on, and facing a really good team out of shoes is great.
All right, last one. Yeah. Big picture, what will you be keeping a close eye on? What part of this team's game will you really watch
for? For us or for Tampa?
For you guys.
I'm excited to see our offense, really, you know. Pitching, I think we've done a good job of kind of maintaining where we should be, and defensively as well. I'm excited for this group, you know, at the plate. You know, I said it all spring. I think the performance was what it was, and it's spring training, and you can kind of put that aside. But the way they went about it, the conversations that happened before and during games was great. Not that that wasn't happening before. But these guys are hungry, and they're ready to take the next step. You know, guys that have been here with new guys that are here. So I'm looking for just the at-bats 1-9, how we're wearing down a starting pitcher, and how we're approaching each guy that comes out of the pen. As you can tell, I'm pretty excited talking about it, but it's been a long time coming for these guys, so hopefully they get off to a good start.
Kevin Barker.
Yeah, look, he's talking about Jose Berríos. Absolutely. I got a little small stat for you. Jose Berríos is one of four pitchers with at least 1,000 innings pitched since the start of 2018 season. That's Garrett Cole, Aaron Nola, and Zach Wheeler. Look, he's predictable. I think that's the one thing. He takes the ball every 5 days. It's, can he take the little next step? And I think that's why they're toying around with the mechanics of what he's doing, the consistent delivery, and the cutter. There's a reason why they took him out of the game last year. I mean, they weren't trying to lose and hurt people's feelings. They thought that it was better for the team and they had a better chance of winning because of what Jose brings stuff-wise against lefties. Lefties been real tough on him. I mean, let's not lie about it. So, look, there's a couple of different parts of, you know, all those, and they don't sit around before a game and just think about losing. How do we lose this thing? How do we take him out and not win a baseball game? They're not doing that. So, you know, he's predictable. He's earned the right to be the opening day starter if Kevin Gausman's not here. And, you know, hopefully take the next step. I do think it's intriguing him talking about the lineup. I mean, you can hear it in his voice a little bit, enough's enough. Like, is this lineup good or not? Is the first four guys in this lineup good or not? Can Dalton Varsho take the next step or not? Can Alejandro Kirk carry his weight when it comes to offensive side of the ball? Can he not? Or yes or no? Like, it's, we put you here, we're going to try and stay out of the way. You can hear it in his voice. It's up to the players. That's what I said. I ain't no more blaming coaches and organizations. No, it's about the player this year. George Springer, where you at? 30-90 or close to that. Like, there's some things here that need to add up. This is what I said when you asked me yesterday, who can they not do without? There's like 10 of them. Because that's where they're at as a team. There's no Ohtani on this team. There's no Mookie Betts on this team. There's no Freddie Freeman on this team. There's no Acuña Jr. on this team. Yeah, there's no Soto. There's no Judge. Like, that's why it's a collection of a bunch of dudes that got to do their thing. So I'm with John. I want to see it. I want to see what they're telling us is going to work. Eflin's a good pitcher. He's going to force them to do things. Let's see if they can do it. It's fun.
The emphasis from John Schneider on seeing more power from the top of the order. This gets back to something we talked about. And I think in spring training, so much of the dialogue was around Don Mattingly and the team approach, et cetera, et cetera. I think it was we had Shai Davide on last week, and Shai had spoken to somebody in the Jays analytics department. Mm. But essentially the point being made was, look, you know, everything else aside, we need better slug. Like, we just do. And they started to see that in spring training. And I think that's what you're getting in John's voice. You know, it was funny because last year, you remember, at one point Don Mattingly said last year, everybody was talking about why the team wasn't hitting home runs at the Rogers Center. And Don Mattingly said, you know, we're not a home run hitting team. I mean, maybe this is who we are. Mm. And I get the sense this year that you know,
so they, last year they weren't, this year they're talking about that, and they've added one person.
Yeah, I think they have greater expectations from Springer. They need to see more power from him. They need to see more power from Vladdy.
They're hoping that Turner gives them more power than
so they had a
Brandon
terrible
Bell
approach.
Did.
They're a home run hitting lineup. They just had a terrible approach last year. That's basically what they're saying.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I found that confusing.
It's easier to be good pitching with a bloop and a bomb. They're stringing together three or four hits. The lineup, I think, consistently is probably not good enough.
You can't do
bloop and a bomb, you can do that.
You can't
times.
Do that, but the thing is about stringing hits together. Look at Alex Anthopoulos' mission. You don't do that in the postseason.
It's hard.
You don't string hits together. Yeah. You know how you win in the postseason? Power pitching, power hitting.
Well, because you're in the American League East, sort of your postseason is all year. Like, you got to hit. You do. You got to slug.
You do.
And they just don't have aircraft carriers to, like, they don't have a guy in their lineup that can give you 30 RBI months consistently or consistently all year be a 20 RBI guy. They just don't consistently have that. I mean, nobody knows that, right? Because you haven't seen it the last couple of years. So this is why I think they're talking about, you know, you're stringing together, you're putting Bo in the three hole instead of the two hole because it makes your team better because he can get hits. He doesn't have to hit a home run to help their team. You know, and it makes everybody else around him better. This is what you do. This is your job as a coaching staff and as an organization to put the player in the best spot to succeed to help your team win a game. And I think they're trying to do that.
All right, we're just, 15 minutes, a little more than 15 minutes away from first pitch at Tropicana Field. What to you, after having spent time in Florida in spring training, what to you is the overarching question about this team that remains to be answered? If I said to you, Kevin, what, there's a lot we don't know about this team. There's a lot we don't know about this season. What do we not know about the most with this team?
Can you consistently make the other team beat you? Don't beat yourself. I saw it in spring training consistently over and over and over again. Taking the extra base when you're not supposed to. With who's up. The team you're playing, you have to play a perfect game almost. And for you to be taking chances that, quite frankly, you should not be taking, they're an older team. They're an experienced team. You shouldn't be doing things like that. There's no excuse for it. That is, I think, the part of it where you sort of have to set it to where it's a habit now that these teams coming in to play the Blue Jays understand that we have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. We saw that last year. They did it a lot. Mm. It ended the season doing it. Can they consistently not do that? That's the thing is, make them beat you. If when in doubt, go base to base. When in doubt on a line drive, stand where you're standing. They don't move. That will sort of pass the baton. You can do that in many different ways. So that will be the one thing that there's not really unknown. I just don't know if they can do it. Can they consistently do it? Can they consistently just take a deep breath and understand what's going on right in front of you? Because we haven't really seen that. So I'm intrigued to see if they can do it.
I wonder if last year wasn't for a lot of these guys a bit of an eye-opener in that end. Because I think, you know, we looked at the Jays offensively the past couple of years, and I think there was a sense that there was enough there. You're not always going to outslug your mistakes. You're not always going to outslug a bad relief outing or a bad start. But this is kind of the first year, I think, where we've looked at a lineup and said, yeah, I just don't know. Now, maybe last year as well to a certain degree. But, yeah, I don't know if they can outslug their mistakes. And I wonder if maybe experiencing that last year, especially at home, where you couldn't just have that eruption you used to have. I wonder if maybe that won't help reinforce in the minds of these guys that they do have to be not more cautious this year, Kevin, but eliminate those mistakes, which they made a lot of those last year.
Yeah. Well, maybe as an organization that sort of told them that they had to go home and make an adjustment offensively, swing at what you can do damage on. If I can, because of the Rogers Center, the ball don't carry to right center, why would I swing at something that the ball is going to go to right center? Unless I have to swing at it. It's like Eflin today. You have to know what you can do damage on early in counts. And when you get to two strikes, know what he likes to throw. Like I know right now against the lefty, he likes to throw a sinker and a changeup and some of the times the breaking ball. Mm-hmm. If I know that just quickly looking up a number, they should all know that. So that way you can zone in and know what you're trying to look in certain counts. That's called a big league approach. And if you do that consistently, 1 through 9, you're not always going to get a hit. But, boy, you could be a tougher out and make it real tough for that person to get you out. So I think that's what it did.
Is it easier to do that early in the year as opposed to in the middle of the year, you know, where the season's dragging? By that point, you can look up at the scoreboard and you got those numbers up there. It's whatever, June 12th, and you're hitting 235 or what. Mm-hmm. Is it easier to...
235, you're hitting cleanup.
And you're probably making $60 million. You're making $60 million a year.
I hit 240 and got sent to Double A.
Yeah, I know.
That's facts.
But
then now they'd have been John Steiner be like, 235. What? Cleanup.
I'd be putting Barker in cleanup. You made me lose my train of thought there, Kevin. Thank you very
much.
You're
welcome.
But is it easier to do all that stuff? Like, are you as a hitter more perfect early in the year than you are later in the year?
Because,
you know, you've had your spring training and you had your rest haven't had the long road trip. Is this a time of year where as a hitter, you are primed and ready to go?
Right. This is why I said 6-4 is, I don't want to say it's a must, but boy, it's going to help. Or a 7-3, dare I say it. Quietly, how about if they were 7-3? You know what that does? That tells you that everything you were preaching and selling in the offseason and what you were trying to do in spring training is actually translating over in the season against good teams. That's what it tells you. And then you don't have to go back to the drawing board and totally reinvent it and figure out something else to do. That's what it tells you. It's about winning now. It's about results. This ain't the dry league. Right? So I think that's where they're at as a lineup now. Everybody's been told this. Go do this. Vladdy, take a slider early in the count because you can't drive that. Look for something middle in. Not in off the plate, but middle in. Because now you've seen it in spring training, and now it's going to work against a good team. Maybe try that. So that's what I said. That's why I'm saying the 6-4 for me. That'll tell them something. That'll give them confidence when they come home that – you know, if they do hit a ball at home that don't go where they think it should go, it's not going to kill their entire season. They're not going to pull their hair out off the field trying to figure out ways to not hit it over there. So, yeah, it's hitting plays tricks, boy. And now pitching's never been better because of how hard they throw and how much they throw secondary pitches. And that elevated fastball, boy, that thing, boy, that'd give you nightmares.
How much are we going to be talking about the elevated fastball?
I hope not a lot. But I don't see how you can't. Like, it's... the first four guys, I do think, can handle it. Turner, don't mind it. He likes it. He's a collision guy. He's out front. He ain't trying to widen out and have uppercut in his swing. No, he's a collision guy, which means he has a lot of movement with his lower half. He don't mind the up and down thing. And then there's after him. You know, you can throw probably Kirk out of the mix because he's flattened out his swing and he is getting a little bit better rotation. His bat looks quicker. And then there's everybody else. So, we'll see.
All right, first pitch is just after 4 o'clock. The Jays lineup, we'll go over it again for you. George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting second. Bo Bichette hitting third. He's at shortstop. Justin Turner's the DH. Dalton Varsho's in left. Alejandro Kirk is behind the plate. Kevin Kiermaier in center. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's at third base. Kevin Biggio at second. Jose Berríos on the mound. For the Rays, it is Diaz, Lowe, Lau, Arozarena, Ramirez. It's already
We practiced that like 6 times where you went on the air. Lau, Low. Low's hurt. Lau's playing.
Paredes, Palacios, Siri, Caballero,
I love you.
Pinto, and Zach.
It's opening day for everybody, Jeff. You know, we're getting in
it's
it. We're just, you know, we're figuring
open.
It
they,
out.
They all run together.
Should be a holiday, in my mind. We should have watched 6 games already. I don't know what baseball's doing.
Well, there's some
105 is a big deal.
No, they had some rain.
They planned this schedule in the offseason.
Do you remember when the Cincinnati...
105.
Do you remember when the opening game was always the Cincinnati Reds? It was always the Cincinnati Reds.
I just remember Ken Griffey Jr. playing at center. That's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And me standing over there going, it's Ken Griffey Jr.
Well, the talking's done. This show is done for now. It's Jays and Rays from the Trop.
And, what can go wrong?
What can go wrong?
They got new turf.
What can go wrong? And always remember, it's early.
Oh.
Mr. Barker and myself will be doing Blue Jays talk after the game. And we'll be back here tomorrow.
from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet. Enjoy the baseball. Happy opening day. Happy New Year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.